it's kind of crazy, but every single day, there are literally thousands of developers who walk into these really high-stakes technical interviews and just completely bomb.
Oh, yeah. It happens all the time. I've seen it firsthand.
Right. And the wild part is that they aren't failing because they can't write code or, like,
right.
they don't understand complex system architecture.
No, usually it's something much more basic that trips them up.
Exactly. I mean, they're failing because they fundamentally don't know how to remove an apple from a basket. Well, at least not the way computer memory actually requires them to do it.
I mean, it sounds almost absurd when you frame it like that, but it is incredibly common.
Totally.
There's this huge disconnect between how we physically manipulate objects in the real world and how we have to manipulate data at the hardware level. And that disconnect trips up even experienced engineers when the pressure is on.
Yeah, we usually talk about learning to code, like learning to cook right. People tend to obsess over the recipes.
Right, they just want the exact syntax.
They want the exact algorithm. It's like, just tell me what to put in the pan so I don't ruin the technical interview.
Which is a terrible way to prepare.
It really is. Because a master chef doesn't just memorize a list of ingredients. They learn the chemistry of cooking. They understand why applying heat transforms a protein rather than just searing a steak, because step 3 of the recipe told them to.
And if you only memorize the recipe, you become brittle.
Yeah.
The moment you walk into a kitchen or an interview setting where the constraints change or you know you are missing an ingredient, you freeze.
You panic.
Exactly. But if you understand the underlying mechanics, you can look at whatever is sitting on the counter and just engineer a solution.
And that actually brings us to our mission for this deep dive. We are taking that chef's mindset that focuses on core chemistry and applying it to a classic algorithmic benchmark.
Ah, yes, leak code number 27.
The famously frustrating remove element challenge. But we aren't here to just read out a solution in Python or C++ SAC.
No, that wouldn't be very helpful.
Right. We're going to unpack the methodology of how to actually think about it.
Yeah.
Because whether you are prepping for a massive technical hurdle or you just want to write more efficient software, getting your mindset right is like the ultimate shortcut.
It really is. Building that mental framework is what separates a coder from an engineer.
Yeah, for sure.
The most valuable part of tackling foundational problems like leak code 27 isn't just passing the test suite. It's internalizing a pattern of thinking that you will apply to complex data streams and memory management for the rest of your career.
Okay, but I want to challenge the premise right out of the gate here.
Go for it.
For anyone listening who has experience with Python or JavaScript remove element, sounds totally trivial. I mean, we have built-in methods for this.
We do, yeah.
I can literally just type dot remove, or I can use a list comprehension to filter out the elements I don't want.
Yeah.
So why on earth are we dedicating a deep dive to a problem that a high-level language solves in literally a single line of code?
Well, because high-level languages are lying to you.
Wow.
Okay.
Lying to us.
Or, well, more accurately, they are hiding the cost of your actions behind an abstraction.
Right.
When you call .remove in a Python list, the interpreter doesn't just make the data magically vanish.
It doesn't just disappear into the ether.
Exactly. It has to physically go into the memory blocks, find the item, delete it, and then manage the gap that was left behind. If you don't understand the cost of that abstraction, you will write applications that scale terribly.
Okay, so what is the actual cost then? Let's say I have an array of like 10,000 user IDs and I need to remove 1,000 inactive users.
Okay.
If I just write a loop that finds an inactive ID and deletes it, what is actually happening under the hood?
To understand the cost, you have to look at the hardware. An array is stored in contiguous memory.
Meaning it's all together.
Right. That means every single item is packed back to back in a solid block. If you delete an item in the middle, say at index 5, you now have a physical gap.
And memory doesn't like gaps, right?
Memory cannot have gaps in an array. So the computer has to take the item at index 6 and shift it into index 5. Then it takes index 7 and shifts it into index 6. It literally has to shift every single remaining element down by one position.
Okay, wait. So if I delete an item near the beginning of a massive array, I am forcing the computer to move millions of items one step to the left just to close that single gap.
Yes. And if you are looping through and doing that for every single inactive user, you find your time complexity absolutely explodes.
Right, because you're doing that massive shift over and over.
Exactly. In Big O notation, what should be a simple linear operation, Big O of n suddenly becomes Big O of n squared.
Ouch.
Yeah. As your data set grows, the time it takes to process doesn't just grow proportionally, it squares. Your program basically grinds to an absolute halt.
Which brings up the core constraint of LeetCode 27. The prompt usually demands that you solve this problem in place.
Which trips a lot of people up.
Meaning you cannot just create a second empty array, walk through the first one, and copy over only the active users. You have to use the original array.
All right.
But why are we so obsessed with in-place operations? Like, why not just use the extra memory if it saves us all that shifting time?
Well, in many modern environments, memory feels infinite, but it really isn't.
Yeah, we get spoiled by our laptops.
We do. Think about real-world applications where in-place algorithms are mandatory. If you are writing software for an embedded system like the braking system in a car or a pacemaker,
oh, wow, yeah.
You have an extremely strict, tiny limit on your RAM. You literally do not have the physical space to duplicate an array.
I imagine high-frequency trading platforms care about this
too. Oh, absolutely.
If you are processing millions of stock ticks a second, pausing to allocate new chunks of memory to copy data into would introduce latency.
Frick, latency is the absolute enemy in those systems, and allocating new memory is computationally very expensive.
Because it has to ask the system for space.
Right. It requires the system to pause, ask the operating system for a new block of RAM, verify it, and then start copying. By requiring an in-place solution, LeetCode 27 is forcing you to optimize for space complexity.
That makes total sense.
It demands a solution that uses big O of one space. Constant space, meaning it requires zero extra memory, regardless of whether the array has 10 items or 10 billion items.
Okay, let's talk about why arrays are designed this way in the first place, though.
Sure.
Because if contiguous memory causes all these shifting problems when we try to remove something, why don't we just use a structure where the items are scattered around so deleting one doesn't affect the rest?
Well, you're describing a linked list, which does exactly that.
Right.
But we use contiguous arrays constantly because of a massive hardware advantage called cache locality.
Cache locality. Break that down for us.
So the CPU inside your computer processes data incredibly fast, much faster than your main memory. Your RAM can serve it up.
RAM is kind of the bottleneck.
Exactly. So the CPU has its own ultra-fast memory called the cache. When the CPU asks for a piece of data, it doesn't just grab that one single byte.
It grabs a bunch.
It grabs a whole chunk of contiguous memory, a cache line, assuming that whatever you need next is probably sitting right next to the thing you just asked for.
Because programs usually read data sequentially.
Right. So if your data is in an array tightly tacked together, the CPU loads a huge chunk of it into the ultra-fast cache all at once. Processing that array becomes lightning fast.
That's super efficient.
It is. If you use a data structure where items are scattered all over the RAM, the CPU suffers what we call a cache miss.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it has to go all the way back out to the slow RAM to fetch the next piece of data.
So we are stuck with contiguous memory because the read speeds are just too good to pass up.
Pretty much.
But that means we have to deal with the removal problem without breaking the system. Which brings us to the shift in mindset.
Here we go.
If the brute force method, finding the target, deleting it, and shifting everything left, is an O of N squared disaster, how are we actually supposed to think about this?
This is the pivot from solving to thinking.
Okay.
When you try to intuitively solve the problem, your brain focuses on the word remove. You look for the element you don't want, and you try to destroy it.
Right. You want to zap the inactive users?
To engineer a proper solution, you have to invert the paradigm. You stop looking at what you want to remove, and you start focusing entirely on what you want to keep.
Ah, so instead of a demolition crew, you become a curator.
Exactly. You are going to iterate through the array, and instead of clearing out the garbage, you're going to actively select the valid data and pack it into the front of the array.
Okay, let's use a physical analogy to visualize how we code this, because we need a mechanism that operates in place.
Meaning no extra memory.
Right. And operates in big O of N time, meaning we only walk through the array once.
Exactly.
So imagine a VIP line at a crowded nightclub. The array is the line of people standing back to back. You are the bouncer.
Okay, I like this.
The target element we want to remove represents people wearing sneakers, which is against the dress code.
That's a great setup. So how does the bouncer handle the line efficiently?
Well, if the bouncer uses the brute force shifting method, they walk down the line, find a guy in sneakers, kick him out, and then make the remaining 500 people all physically take one step forward to close the gap.
Just to fill the empty space.
Right. Then they check the next person. I mean, it would take all night.
And everyone in line would be completely exhausted.
Right. But if we use the optimal algorithmic mindset, the two-pointer technique, we hire a second person, We have two bouncers. We'll call them the reader and the writer.
Let's map this directly to the pointer variables in our code.
Yeah, say that.
The reader is a fast pointer and the writer is a slow pointer. Both of them start at the very front of the line at index 0.
The reader's only job is to walk down the line quickly looking at everyone's shoes. The reader doesn't kick anyone out. They just observe.
Right. They're just evaluating.
The writer stays at the front of the line managing the boundary of the true verified VIP section.
So what happens when the reader encounters someone wearing sneakers, the target element we want to remove?
The reader just ignores them and walks to the next person in line. No kicking out, no shifting the crowd. Because in our code, the reader pointer just increments by one. The writer pointer doesn't move at all.
And this is a critical point. By just moving the reader pointer forward, you've essentially bypassed the unwanted element without doing any expensive dilution operations. The memory stays contiguous. You just haven't written anything to it.
But when the reader finds someone wearing dress shoes, an element of it, we actually want to keep the reader points them out.
Okay.
The writer grabs that person and places them in whatever spot the writer is currently standing in. Then the writer takes one step forward, expanding the verified VIP section by one.
Right. In the code, you are overwriting the value at the writer's index with the value at the reader's index.
So copying it over.
Exactly. Let's say the first three elements were target's sneakers. The leader walked past them, but the writer is still at index 0.
Waiting for a valid person.
When the reader finds a valid item at index 3, it copies that valid item into index 0. The garbage that was previously at index 0 is destroyed by the overwrite.
And because the reader is always moving faster than or equal to the writer, the writer is never going to overwrite valid data that hasn't been checked yet. The writer is only ever writing over data we've already evaluated and decided to discard.
And that is the beauty of the two-pointer technique.
It's so clean.
By the time the reader gets to the end of the array, the writer has neatly packed every single valid element into the front of the array in sequential order.
Wow.
You only traverse the list one time, achieving big O of n time complexity, and you use the existing array, achieving big O of 1 space complexity.
But wait, what about the leftover data at the end of the array?
Ah, the stale data.
Yeah, like if my array was 10 items long and I removed 4 items, my valid data takes up the first 6 slots. But the array is still physically 10 slots long in memory. What is sitting in those last 4 slots?
Well, it's just stale data. It might be duplicates of the valid elements we pulled forward, or it might be the target elements we were trying to remove.
Doesn't that mess things up?
The brilliance of the prompt and how low-level systems handle memory is that it doesn't matter. The algorithm returns the new length of the valid array, which is 6. Any operations moving forward will only iterate up to index 6. The rest is functionally dead space, waiting to be overwritten later.
Oh, that's clever. Let's stress test this, though. An algorithm is only as good as its ability to handle edge cases.
Good idea. Let's do it.
It's easy to explain a concept when the data is perfectly mixed. But what if we pass this two-pointer mechanism an array that is completely empty?
If the array is empty, both the reader and writer pointers initialize.
Okay.
The reader checks the condition to enter the loop, realizes there's nothing to read, and the loop never executes. The function just returns a length of 0.
So it doesn't crash.
No. It handles the empty array flawlessly without needing a separate if array is empty check at the top of your code.
Okay, what if every single item in the array is the target element? Like an array of 100 people and all 100 are wearing sneakers.
The reader pointer will march down the entire array checking all 100 items.
Yep.
Because it never finds a valid item, it never signals the writer.
So the writer just sits there.
The writer pointer stays stuck at index 0 the entire time. The loop finishes. The function returns a length of 0. Again, it works perfectly without any nested loops or special conditions.
And the opposite extreme, what if none of the items are the target element? Everyone is wearing dress shoes.
In that scenario, the reader looks at index 0, says this is valid, and tells the writer to write it at index 0.
Writing it over itself, essentially.
Exactly. They both move forward. At index 1, the reader says valid. The writer writes it at index 1. They move in lockstep through the entire array.
That's pretty cool.
The data is essentially overwritten with itself, which is slightly redundant computationally, but structurally perfectly safe. It returns the full length of the original array.
That level of robustness is really why the two-pointer technique is the required mental model here, isn't it?
Oh, definitely.
Because when you use brute force, every edge case requires a patch. You end up with a messy nested spider web of if-else statements trying to catch out-of-bounds errors or empty arrays.
Which brings us back to the psychological aspect of high-pressure environments like interviews.
The panic factor.
When you are writing code on a whiteboard or a shared screen, cognitive load is your worst enemy.
Oh, for sure.
If you start down a path that requires you to manually track array sizes, manage shifting indexes, and write custom logic for edge cases, your brain just runs out of working memory. You lose the thread, panic sets in, and you freeze.
I've been there so many times. You write a while loop, you run a test case in your head, and suddenly you realize your index variable is off by one.
The classic off by one error.
Yes, and you're infinitely looping or crashing the system.
But the two-pointer pattern eliminates that cognitive load. You don't have to think about the shifting.
Right.
You don't have to worry about index out of bounds errors because your reader simply stops when it hits the end of the array length. Having this explicit map in your head reduces the problem from a stressful juggling act to just a straightforward mechanical process.
And it is a highly scalable framework. Once you master this specific mechanic of decoupling the process of reading data from the process of writing data, it unlocks a huge category of algorithmic problems.
Oh, you see it everywhere. If you get a problem like move all the zeros to the end of an array, it's the exact same two-pointer concept.
Really?
Yeah. Or if you need to remove duplicates from a sorted array, which is leak code number 26, actually it's the exact same pattern. You're just comparing the reader's value to the previous value instead of a target number.
That's amazing.
Once you stop focusing on destroying data and start focusing on routing valid data, you have a master key for in-place array manipulation.
So to bring this all together for you listening, tackling leak code 27 is not really about removing elements.
Not at all.
It's a masterclass in shifting your perspective to match the physical realities of the hardware you are programming for. It forces you to respect contiguous memory, to understand cache locality, and to recognize that abstraction, like a simple Python.remove method, often hides catastrophic inefficiency.
Because the code you type is ultimately just the translation of your thoughts. If your mental model is messy and reactive, your code will be fragile and slow.
Yeah.
But if your mental model is clear and engineered to respect the constraints, the code almost writes itself. The two-pointer technique isn't just a trick to pass a test. It is an elegant solution born directly from the constraints of big O of N time and big O of one space.
And those constraints aren't there to trick you. They are the guardrails guiding you away from brute force and toward actual software engineering.
Well said.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, let's go back to our kitchen chemistry. The next time you encounter a technical roadblock, whether it's an algorithm in architecture design or a really stubborn bottleneck in your data pipeline, take a step back. Ask yourself, are you just rushing to make it work, tossing syntax at the screen and hoping it compiles? Or have you taken the time to uncover the underlying mechanics of how you should actually be thinking about it?